Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the Behind Company Lines podcast. Today, we have Maxime Fatih and Dominic Tourneau, CEO and principal engineer of Temporal, a developer-first open source platform that ensures the successful execution of services and applications. It's a special treat today to have both of you on the show, not only to discuss what you're working on at Temporal, but also obviously your background, your experiences, kind of the open source base, as we were talking about before the show, that's so exciting in terms of its ability to not only be available technology for other developers to use, but really kind of perpetuate the cycle of improving technology and fostering community. So we'll get into the weeds of what that's like. But just to kick off here, Maxime, tell us what you were doing before you started the company.
I was an engineer. I was always IC, had a middle contributor in large companies. I came to America in 98 and I worked for a startup, but then I switched to Amazon and I spent 8.5 years at Amazon. Mm-hmm. And then I also worked a couple of years at Microsoft, 3 years at Google, and last 4 years before starting the company at Uber. So I was always just an engineer, like tech lead for projects. I never managed a single person before starting the company.
Oh, really? That's incredible to think about that transition and what that means towards not only building technology, but also creating a product and a team around it. And Dominic, tell us what you were doing before you joined the company.
I had a similar background to Max. So I was at SAP. I came to the United States in 2008. I was at SAP for about 10 years. And then I joined Cisco for about 1 year. I imagined myself to be at Cisco for many more years to come. But then, I crossed Temporal's path and I was absolutely fascinated by the technology itself. And I was very taken by the founding team and the team. So then I made the jump from the large enterprise to the startup world. And like Max, never managed a single individual in my life. But unlike Max, I still don't manage a single.
It's so incredible to hear that you both come from large companies and transitioning into the startup world. I'll start with you, Max. Maxime, what in particular did you see that larger companies are doing right in terms of their operations and infrastructure? And what type of maturity did you bring from that experience into Temporal when you started building the company? And what were some quick lessons you learned when starting to build teams and grow once you kick off the company?
I think the main thing large companies have, they have infrastructure, right? Infrastructure for everything. Infrastructure for hiring, infrastructure for engineering, infrastructure for like marketing and so on and so on. And at startup world, you practically need to first learn all these things from scratch and then execute on them. Like, obviously, hiring probably was the hardest one initially. Yes. So getting people, and we started 3 years ago. Right now, our market is very different. But if you can think about three and a half years ago, hiring people, and we were trying to hire locally initially on in Seattle.
Yeah.
And in Seattle, people don't like really understand startups the way people do it, for example, in Silicon Valley.
Right.
Or San Francisco. So for us, and for we also type of engineers we wanted were engineers who could get a job in any like top tier company. Yeah. And competing with those companies and getting engineers was actually the hardest part probably.
Yeah. It's incredible to think about that, especially when you started the company, how rich the talent was, but also the startup landscape was still kind of in centralized in certain locations like Silicon Valley, New York, Miami, or with some Atlanta. But now it's completely dispersed and across the board. And it's so fascinating to see the growth of that industry. Dominic, a question for you in regards to the technology, what were some of the problems that you saw and how did you get involved with Temporal? Was it at your current company and you started using the product, or did you kind of see it in open source forums and start working with the technology? What was that introduction like, and what particularly got you excited about what they were doing at Temporal?
I came across Temporal the first time during the pandemic, and I'm sure everybody had a similar experience during the pandemic. You found ways to entertain yourself.
Yeah.
So I had an ever-growing reading list.
Yeah.
And eventually I came across Temporal, the technology, and I was, okay, that's interesting. So throw it on the reading list. And then I made my way through the reading list. And then I think a month or 2 months later, I came back to it, to that particular entry.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, let's dive into this.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the technology and also at the implementation. And when it clicked, I was absolutely floored. I was absolutely floored. And in that moment, but not quite in that moment, but actually the very same week, while I was still studying up on Temporal, Tempol reached out to me. And then I was like, okay, I have to get on this call. And then talking to the founders and talking to the other engineers on the team, and I 100% sold. Because as Max said, right, so large companies, they have the infrastructure. And one aspect of that infrastructure is they have huge teams, right?
Yeah.
SAP, 100,000 colleagues. Yeah. Cisco, I believe around 75,000 colleagues. But then at Tempol at that time, I was, of course, massively downsized, 20 potential colleagues.
Yeah.
But the concentration of talent in these 20 people was just absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So the combination of technology and people, and that was an easy decision.
Yeah, yeah. It's incredible to think about, especially so in startups, it's so critical, that early team. And it's that collaboration, it's that ability to, one founder talks about, like, it's the type of people who see something on the ground and pick versus just walking past it and ignoring it. It's that kind of proactiveness and mentality that really drives the success of a lot of startups. Maxine, a question for you in regards to open source and this whole concept. I think people are becoming more and more aware of it. It's becoming more and more of a household kind of concept, but describe, was Tempol always open source? Did you ship it out into kind of the world to see if developers would use it? What's the story behind kind of that process and collaborating with all the developers in the community that started to use the technology? And when did you know that it was viable enough to build a company around and start using that service in other companies across and that they would need it? What's that story?
I think if you want to get a story, probably started a little bit earlier.
As you
mentioned, I spent 8.5 years at Amazon. And actually was there twice, so it's total 8.5 years. And I joined Amazon first time in 2002, when it was a relatively small company, though it already was bubbling, but it was around 800 developers. Certainly not comparable to any, what it is right now. And back then, Amazon was the first company which decided to go all in on microservices, because when I joined, it was actually one big monolith.
Yeah,
the problem with that monolith was that the project, you could actually run the full Amazon website on a single machine, developer machine, which was kind of cool. You could put breakpoints and play with that. But the problem was that it took 18 hours to compile, like mainline on a pretty powerful machine. It's not even developing desktop.
Yeah.
And then every time you change something, relinking that thing was 40 minutes. So probably that was 40 minutes relinking that application. So sometimes you can do dynamic libraries and avoid slow relinking, but still, development process was very, very hard. And they realized the only way to kind of scale is to go to microservices. We call it microservices these days. Back then it was service, and I kind of witnessed the whole thing. And I was tickling for the practically infrastructure component, which would practically pops up, like the messaging or Amazon.
Hmm.
And it was well before Kafka existed, right? So we practically built our own stack. And I was too late for that. Later, Simple Queue Service, Amazon AWS appeared later, like web services.
Yeah.
And Simple Queue Service took that as a backend. So that I think that engine is still there. So we kind of learned at Amazon that this type of like queuing and messaging is a cool idea to kind of coordinate between microservices. But at the same time, we realized that it's actually a pretty bad way to do microservice orchestration and coordination between, because that becomes very complicated.
Yeah.
And we started to think about orchestration solution, and we had three internal versions, and the public version of that was AWS Simple Workflow Service, AWS SWF. I was tech lead for that. And we were the first time introduced ideas which we right now have into forum. And we didn't kind of completely nailed it down, but at least these ideas were played, and we played with those ideas. And then later, practically, when we ended up with Uber, with my co-founder Samar, who also worked with me on a simple workflow, we built messaging system and as an open source. But later, we kind of switched to this other system. We called it Cadence, which was kind of based on the ideas of the simple workflow service from Amazon.
Yeah.
And at Uber, we started to build it as open source from the beginning.
Yeah.
Uber allowed us to do that, and we practically put it out, and we were developed. You can go there right now on GitHub and see all the check-ins while it was developed. And the interesting part is that we drove adoption within Uber. Within 3 years, we got up to 100 use cases. But first 2 years, we didn't get any external adoption. It was a crickets. People just were, okay, it's GitHub, not that many stars, go there, check it out, nothing happens.
Right.
But then 2 years in, for some reason, we started to get adoption, and first companies were like HashiCorp, for example, one of the first who started to use us, and then Airbnb, Coinbase. So we actually got pretty interesting digital native companies which embraced the technology. And then from now on, I think we ended up on the Kaku News.
Yeah.
And people knew, I went to a few conferences, and then it started kind of to pick up and open source community started to grow. Now we have around 100 people in our own just Slack channel. But we believe many more developers use us, like probably around 100K people already using our technology in some shape or form.
Yeah.
And so frankly, just to summarize that, we didn't build it from scratch as a company. It was always, we started a tool that ran for 4 years. And then we realized that the only way to really make it popular and like a large scale kind of open source project is to have a company behind it. Because we should focus on external adoption on people in the world who want to use that.
Yeah. Yeah. And real quick, before I go to you, Dominic, a follow-up question, Maxim, is what is the process like to getting a company to adopt, say, an open source tool or technology? Just for those who don't know in the market, we think about open source, at least some of the individuals who are less technical like myself, we think about open source as readily available, usable, and then kind of like you can kind of, your engineering team can use the SDKs to start building more efficiently, more effectively, and all these tools. But what is that external adoption driven by in terms of a company standpoint? How do you identify what target to focus on, who's adopting it, what company do you want to get this technology into, and also how does something that is available online?
So from our company point of view, you mean? I felt most of our adoption so far was organic. It's not like we went to companies and like we certainly present at conferences. We do go talks. We do blog posts.
Yeah.
But most of the adoption actually came from Uber. Because Uber was a large company and at Uber it became very popular. As I said, when we left, it was around 100 use cases. Now it's probably thousands. And the developers move around, right? And then in the US, at least developers change companies very frequently.
Yeah.
And every week somebody comes and says, at Uber, I use this technology. Now I want to use it in my new company. And that was the major, I think, just people talking to each other and bringing to other companies. That was the major, I think, adoption. So, and as it is, also open source is like very different types of open source. One thing about Tempora, we have very permissive license. We have MIT license and we have Apache 2 for some components.
Yeah.
So practically, which means that most companies have no problem using open source with this license. Obviously, if you have some other more complex company, you can have some, like other companies can say, no, like let me go for water.
Yeah.
But if it's MIT, most companies, okay, you can use it. You don't really need to prove anything because this is a very permissive license. So a lot of our adoption happens bottoms up. People do POC, people do hackathon, just put it in one use case.
Yeah.
And later, the way our software works is that there is SDK library, as you mentioned, which you write your code and so on. And there is backend component, more like Linux, like a service.
Right.
And that's only monetized by just running the service for you. So your experience, how you develop and how you run your code, how you deploy your code doesn't change. The only thing it changes, it's like this hosted database in the cloud, right?
Yeah.
You can run with your own database, you can use hosted one. The same thing with hosted Tempora.
Yeah. And Dominic, I'm so
you can hear more like in details if you want to, like about monetization and stuff like that.
No, for sure. I'm curious, Dominic, from your perspective as an engineer and as a builder, you've worked with different types of companies, and I'm curious from a building standpoint, what has been some of the benefit to building with open source kind of tool and technology and availability, but also what are some of the challenges that people may not know if kind of the source code is available and people are able to use it? What are some things you like about it? What are some challenges that come with building in the way you are now?
So I want to argue that when I entered the ecosystem, right, there was this, I would say, turning point. So you could say when I entered the ecosystem, we just crossed the chasm from like open source nomad to open source native.
Yeah.
And then surely from 2010 to 2020, the open source ecosystem completely exploded.
Yeah.
So I did see the change that this explosion brought with it. And the most powerful impact to me was that even so, SAP and Cisco were large companies. They were closed in the sense of collaboration, right?
Yet
once you have an open source project, there is basically no boundary. There's no limit.
Right? Yeah.
The open source project itself defines the ecosystem, defines its community. It is not defined by a company anymore.
Yeah.
And with that, you can work with incredible talent across company boundaries. And that is for sure, this in hugely empowering and hugely uplifting.
Yeah.
To be working with the people who are just like passionate and interested in that particular technology, in that particular project, and who are not confined by company boundaries.
Yeah.
So I have to say, I have only good things to say because I am very much an engineer. I'm very content and technology. The business problems are not on my mind. They are on Max's mind, not on my mind. So I have nothing bad to say.
Sure.
About an open source and the ecosystem that form around it.
Yeah. And follow up question, Dominic, for the engineers in the audience that care to kind of reach principal status, and that could mean many things. It could be the first at a company. It could be the most senior level engineer, but really it's the responsibility and the ownership and all that kind of encompasses. And I'm sure a lot of proactive communication on your end, thinking about ways the technology could be better. What are some advice that you would give other engineers out there who are either the principal engineer currently or striving to be one at a company that they're passionate about? What are some of the best practices that you have for accomplishing the work that you need to? And what are some things to think about if you are an engineer kind of up-leveling your career, working on technology and thinking about ways to improve it and collaborating with the founding team?
So in general, but that is true for every stage in your career, is never stop learning.
Right? Yeah.
Always be curious. Never stop learning. Yeah. That is fairly generic advice and maybe borders on a cliche. But that is for sure got me to where am I today. That is that curiosity and that learning opportunity. Take that learning opportunity. Yeah. And then, of course, when you cross the chasm from more junior to more senior, you take more ownership and you take more initiative. And that can come in many, many forms.
Yeah.
So for example, at Temporal, what I very much enjoy to do is to talk to our ecosystem. So I am a lot out there on the, for example, Temporal Slack, but also conferences and so on. And meet with people in our ecosystem, meet with our users, whether they are customers or not customers, meet with our users. And then talk about their use cases, talk about their requirements, and then work with them on their architecture.
Yeah.
And that is personally, there's like, that is an activity that I hugely enjoy. And at Temporal, I do have the possibility to actually engage in that a lot.
Yeah.
But there's basically lots of different possibilities, right?
Right.
How you can up-level lots of different dimensions. That's one of them that I chose.
Yeah, incredible to think about. And also thinking about more about the company and the technology and the business problems they're solving. And Maxim, I'll shift this question to you. Are there any use cases you've seen that are particularly exciting that you didn't expect Temporal to be used for, or the companies or industries? How far reaching is the technology and how many companies are benefiting? And what is the overall benefit, if you were to sum it up, for companies who adopt technology, whether sophisticated or simplified, as Temporal?
Yeah, I think we probably want to at some point talk about what actual Temporal is, right? Because certainly it's easy to say you will get benefits without explaining what it is.
Yeah.
But if you just talk about the time of use case, we are very, practically, if you think about it, we are the target for developers. So we are, our only product is used by developers directly, which helps to develop code. And so developers need to write code and write the application using our approach.
Yeah.
Which makes their life much easier because they need to write much less code and their code gets reliability on the infrastructure level.
Yeah.
And we can go into the details of that. Because it's so generic, it's like a new way to write distributed reliable systems. It's applicable almost everywhere. So practically every time you need to say, I need something complete, or I need to make sure that my data is not lost and my kind of business process or whatever keeps going in presence of all failures, to put all them to it.
Yeah.
And almost everything fits there. If you think about it, infrastructure automation, deploying data centers, configuring clusters and bunch of APIs there, life cycles, almost anything like from databases Flink clusters. That is one. For example, HashiCorp, one of the first use cases, they practically built control plane from their cloud. Like HashiCorp didn't have cloud offering, then they started to build cloud offering. They needed an engine and they used Temporal for that. That is one. But then you go out, you have, for example, things like big data or ML pipelines. you need to automate, and it's not only just you need to actually have automation around that, control plane around that, life cycle of those. That is where we used a lot. And then you go up the level, you can do payment system, for example, like a lot of fintech and banks use it to do payments.
Yeah.
And practically make sure that you do payments. And Dominic, you can give, for example, just talk about how you do like a saga pattern using our like how it fits with our approach. And then you go up in the practical business level, you do things like Wolverine, so DoorDash, or you do practically business process. And we've seen, and then you go like IoT devices and managing IoT devices and so on and so on. And practically all the time, when you say, I need this to be reliable, be a good fit.
Yeah.
And that's why like a number of use cases is practically flawed, and it's almost everything.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to say it doesn't fit. It's like a few.
Yeah. And describe a little bit more. So I know you alluded to it a little bit more in talking about the use cases, but describe the technology and the mechanics behind it, just to give our audience a breadth of what it does, how it works, and if I'm a developer, what should be my expectation for the experience I'm having?
Yeah, I think I'll let Dominic kind of talk on a high level. He's good at that.
Good.
So actually, Max already got started on this. So Max characterized temporal as transactions for distributed systems. And I very much like that analogy. If you think about cases and transactions have great desirable properties, right?
Yeah.
And that property is usually summarized in the acronym ACID: atomicity, right? Consistency, isolation, and durability. But that super slick acronym shadows a little bit a very fundamental property of transaction, and that is the guarantee of completeness.
Yeah.
When I start a transaction, I get the guarantee that the transaction executes effectively once, or it doesn't execute at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And with this exactly once or not at all semantic, it is almost trivial to transition the system from a consistent state to a consistent state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now temporal actually does the very same thing, not to databases, but to distributed systems.
Yeah.
Temporal offers a core abstraction like a transaction that we call durable execution. And the durable execution is really just a function execution, but with strong execution guarantees.
Yeah.
That function cannot fail, and that function cannot time out. So as a developer, you get an amazing developer experience because you can literally write code as if level failure and platform level timeouts, they don't even exist.
Yeah.
All right. We have very impressive examples where we implement a monthly subscription workflow where once a month you charge a credit card as a for loop, a never ending for loop.
Yeah.
It says, charge this credit card and now sleep for a month.
Yes.
And this function doesn't even account for the possibility of a crash fault or a timeout, because temporal makes sure that for that function, that possibility does not exist, just like a transaction does.
Yeah.
And with temporal workflow, a lot of problems become trivial because the underlying cause of the problem is already taken care of.
Yeah. Wow. It's incredible to think about the way the system is built and how honestly at peace a lot of developers can be with this continuous operating system. And it's amazing to see the use cases and the amount of traction you've seen in the market just organically. And I'll shift this question to you, Max. What are some of the biggest challenges that Temporal faces today?
I think the main challenge, I wouldn't say it's a challenge, but this is something that which kind of slows down on us. Is just in awareness. I'm pretty sure there are a lot of your listeners which never thought about temporal. And what we know is once people learn about it, they get pretty excited. And this is a very useful platform. And we had some limitations throughout languages, but now we support all the major languages. We recently added support for TypeScript and Python.
Yeah.
So every developer out there, but we also support Java, Go, PHP. We added support for .NET and later Ruby. So we are practically in every major language right now. And so every developer can use it as today. And I think it's mostly about awareness. That's why we are talking to you, right? Because we want to have just your, You can, don't need to trust me. Just go to our website, temporal.io, and it's open source. You can go to documentation or tutorials, education, and join our Slack community and make your own opinion.
Yeah.
But the reality is, as Dominic said, like at some point, light bulb will go on and they are, oh, right. This technology kind of will save me a lot of time and effort and make a kind of completely, I will need to completely rethink how I build systems. I will see it all the time. Right. If you think about it, the rest is execution. A nice thing about our startup, our experience wasn't very standard for startups because hardest part of the startup fighting this product market fit, right?
Yeah.
Like this magical product market fit. In our case, we had product market fit before we started the company because we already had adoption, external adoption on the open source project. And within Amazon and Uber and also Microsoft, because my co-founder did Simotech and Microsoft.
Yeah.
If you ever heard about Azure Durable Functions.
Mm-hmm.
He was the author of Durable Tasks. So we kind of have these three big companies where everything became pretty popular. So we kind of already knew that this idea will fly. It just, for us, it's mostly execution.
Like yeah.
Startups should execute and growing company, building company, hiring people, doing all these other things.
Yeah.
So it's simple, but this is execution, how to execute.
Yeah. Yeah. Dominic, I'm interested to hear your theory. I know you're going to speak on it, but please talk.
Yes, I have a theory. And that is that it's an ecosystem. We are not used to try and then embrace new core abstractions. And that is because that actually doesn't happen very often. So one of the first core abstractions was operating systems. For example, a process, right? Before I had the core abstraction of processes, I was responsible to manage the CPU on an application level, right? But then processes came around and a process gave me the illusion that my application owns the CPU all by itself. And similar happens to memory and virtual memory.
Yeah,
I gave
yeah.
the illusion that memory is unlimited.
Yeah.
Then a new core abstraction a few years later came around, that is database transactions, right? Database transactions gave you the illusion that this transaction that cannot fail and it runs in perfect isolation.
Yeah.
But then for a very long time, no new core abstractions came around. Right? And I think that temporal, the durable execution, is one of these core abstractions, something that lets you think different. But since we are all process natives and all transaction natives, we don't really think about it. We just take it for granted, right? But we are durable execution nomads. That core action is still fairly new.
Yeah.
But we don't have a lot of experience how we internalize that.
Well,
so I do believe that Max is spot on. And he says one of the core challenges is basically the hearts and minds of the developers and communicating that core abstraction.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm curious to hear from both of you, if everything goes well, what's the long-term vision for Temporal? And I'll start with you, Max. What's the long-term vision for Temporal?
Obviously, we can move companies in a lot of different directions, but I think the minimum like long-term vision is, I think the most important thing is that this open source project to succeed independently from the company, right? Like Temporal is an open source project. I think at least I want every developer know about it.
Yeah.
And I really understand what it provides. And then obviously it doesn't fit 100% of use cases, but at least in the use case where it's a good fit, I expect it to be used a lot.
Yeah.
And we also, I believe this time there'll be more products using this durable execution approach because again, it's like transactions. There was one database probably initially, and then now we have a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But along the term with the company, I believe that we can build a company which will simplify life of developers because we can just manage a lot of complexity for them.
Yeah.
Mostly around how to run that. So every developer will be able to just take the SDK, link up the application, start using that, and just point to our backend service, and we will take care of all the hard problems for them about making reliable, scale, and so on. And I'm not even talking about complex things like multi-region deployments or failovers and so on. We have a lot of those ideas and the things in production as well.
Yeah.
So all the things will take off. And I see potential of this market is practically immense because every company has thousands and thousands of use cases with this morning.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not a big market. This also makes our VCs very excited.
Yeah. I can imagine. And Dominic, would you add anything to that? Anything that you think in terms of the long-term vision for the technology and the company and where things will be going?
So, yeah, the company strategy, that all rests on Max's shoulders. But given the technology and the core abstraction, I believe that durable executions, they will grow into the cloud programming model.
Mm-hmm.
And up to this point, right, we have figured out how we provide scale, all right, with the very same one command line command or terminal command. I can provision one machine on AWS, 10 machines, 100, 1,000.
Yeah.
There is no limit.
Yeah.
But running applications, right, is a very different ballgame if I run it on one machine, on 10 machines, on 100 or 1,000.
Yeah.
But then when we have something like durable executions as a foundation of a cloud programming model, then between running your application on one machine, 10 machines, 100 machines, or 1,000 machines is actually like just disappears.
Yeah.
And so in short, I want to say for temporal, there's only one way, and that is durable executions everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I know we're coming close to the end of the show, so I want to make sure I ask this question because I love how people essentially digest or abstract knowledge from things that they ingest, whether it was early in your career or now. And I'll start with you, Max, and then I'll go to you, Dominic. What books or people have influenced you the most?
Books or people? I read all the kind of standard books back then, right? Like about patterns, about whatever, about architectures and so on.
Yeah.
But I think most important thing was just working with people. And I was super lucky to work at Amazon. And I think Amazon, especially like it's got a very high concentration of talent, especially in the infrastructure space and the services space. And just witnessing like door for things like S3, like just AWS, and just understanding how people think, how they approach problems. That was, I think, the biggest one. It's just it's not even one person. It's just, I think Amazon fits just such a huge concentration of talent.
Yeah.
And the types of problems that we are trying to solve and the approach to those problems, like trying to solve for the whole world. It's extremely hard to build service which you expect can kind of the whole world run on. And like S3, I remember they did presentation internally when they planned it, they had a certain kind of, okay, what would be the most scalable kind of solution we need to build? And okay, let's build whatever will scale. And then they showed like a few years later that they built that scale like multiple orders of magnitude.
Yeah.
So they couldn't even imagine that how big it would be.
Yeah.
So I think that witnessing that in person, I think was the kind of, for me, the most something which influenced big time how I think about systems, how we design systems for all. Because again, if you want every company to kind of rely on us, this service should be not something you need to think from beginning, from first principles. One thing you cannot do, you cannot add scale later.
Yeah.
The idea that you build something and then like magically add it later just doesn't work. This is one thing about Temporal, which is cool, is why startups like us, for example, budget Y Combinator startups use us. Because we speed up development big time. Sometimes we hear 5x improvements of like speed of development. But at the same time, we work with, even if you have like very small scale, it helps you to develop faster.
Yeah.
But because we build it for Uber size kind of business, and we run at Uber at large scale from the beginning, we know the technology can practically grow even more. Like practically, your startup can grow as much. For example, Snapchat. Every Snapchat story update goes for our service. And there are a lot of snaps are taken during for the new AEC. And so you know that you can build with Snapchat size, but you can small startup and you need to change your code. It just needs running and scaling automatically for you.
Yeah. Incredible. And Dominic, question going to you. What books or people have influenced you the most?
So one of the early influences was in college, my professor Dr. Wendt, Siegfried Wendt. And he is a father of the fundamental modeling concepts. And he instilled the notion of systems thinking into me and conceptual modeling. And that was very early on, got me on the systems engineering path. And then the next turning point was discovering Leslie Lampert's work on TLA plus the temporal logic of actions. And that turned out to not just a method or a tool, that is a thinking tool. It shaped my entire thinking around systems and distributed systems and was hugely valuable. It was very much an up-leveling game. So, of course, I'm obviously biased, But I encourage everybody to look into conceptual modeling, into formal modeling, and into systems modeling. And do get started with the works on TLA Plus, because there are also other authors besides Leslie Lampert that use that methodology and the thinking tool to teach others how to approach complex systems.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been such a pleasure having both of you on the show. And last little bit, I always like to ask this question before we share your plugs, your websites and everything like that, where our audience can find you. But I'd love to ask you both, is there any question that I didn't ask that you would have liked to answer or that I should have asked you? Anything come to mind?
I think one thing which I want to just mention is that we have a developer conference in September.
Yeah.
So we had our first conference last year, and it was super cool crowd from, and you can find it online on our website. But I absolutely recommend you to join our conference in September, even if you don't know, new to Temporal, or you already know a lot about that. So we have members of community who are with us for already 6 years. But at the same time, we have a lot of, last time we had a lot of people who just came first time.
Yeah.
As Patrick said, we saw it somewhere and we just came to conference to learn about it. And I think that was pretty amazing. So please come to our conference. You will find the references on our website and everywhere.
Amazing. Yeah. Anything I missed on your end?
So I just also want to offer some more material. And that is last year in 2022, I spoke at a Strange Loop conference about Temporal. And the title of that talk is Workflows, a New Core Abstraction for Distributed Systems. So for anybody who is interested, especially in like the conceptual foundations, the theory that powers Temporal, then I want to recommend that Strange Loop talk that is online on YouTube at the Strange Loop channel.
Fantastic. And obviously, we'll share this with our audience. We have a huge developer community that we are in constant contact with from a company I run, Otter Labs, and also the different founders out there and different CTOs that are building and looking for better and more efficient ways to build. And especially as they scale their startups, like you said, it not only works for startups, but for larger companies. So we're obviously going to share this with our communities, our developers and our founders, but let us know where we can find you, where we can find you on LinkedIn, where we can find Temporal. Give us your websites, give us your LinkedIns, give us everything that we need to know to come support you too, but also to support the company and what you're working on.
So yeah, on LinkedIn is just my last trust and last name. Empatip is my Twitter. But go to our temporal.io website and temporal.io/Slack. You can join our community Slack and we have support forum and we have, and like you can find me there all the time. So it's not a cut to contact me directly if you want to.
Amazing.
So I would recommend to go for our Slack to kind of be in connection with our like project and me personally.
Absolutely. Dominic, yourself.
So I hang out on Twitter a lot, Dominic Torno. And I tweet a lot about Temporal, of course, but also a lot about distributed systems in general and databases and transaction processing systems. And if you want to talk about Temporal, if you want to talk about like your use cases, your requirements, and then check out how Temporal may fit in your existing landscape or how Temporal may fit for your next project, then do find me on temporal.io/Slack. Just on the Introduce Yourself a Water Cooler channel or send me a DM. I'm super happy to get together on Zoom or any other platform. And then we talk about your project.
Amazing. Maxim, Dominic, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you, not only learning about the story behind Temporal, but what you're working on, the use cases that you can connect to and how people can get in touch. I'm so excited to see this technology grow and ultimately all the technologies that are similar to yours in the way that they just help companies run more efficiently, be better in terms of the technology and enabling their developers to do more work and spend less time on redundant tasks or tasks that don't necessarily need to take the time that they do. But anyways, thank you so much for being on the show. I hope you enjoyed yourself and I hope you enjoyed being on Behind Company Lines today.
Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.